Good morning and welcome to St. Paul's Bible Study. We'll be looking at the book of James today, and we'll be starting in chapter 3. So I beg your patience as we get ourselves settled and people come in. All right, here we go. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good. How is Rose going?
She's well. Hold on. She's recovering nicely and she's back to work right now.
Oh, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Only barely.
I don't understand. Okay.
Well, I can hear you now.
Can you hear me as if I were in the same room with you?
As I said, at first, no.
Okay.
And then later, yes.
Now you can. Okay. Mm-hmm. I made some changes. I want to make sure they're effective. So. Okay.
We'll see.
Hello, everybody.
Good morning.
Well, and I do know that Governor Hochul is going to lift the mask mandate today.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need to wait on the vestry's decision to have Bible study face-to-face. And okay. So as soon as the vestry makes that decision, then we can meet face-to-face, and that might be easier in a mm-hmm. lot of ways.
Yeah, but we'll still have Grace on Zoom.
Okay.
I mean, Grace is in Florida, and we want to keep her involved. So we can use that owl mechanism that's in the library.
Right.
Something like that.
I'll figure out how to set it up, or I'll have Liz set it up for us.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. That sounds good. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's just going to be us for now. If other people want to join us, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So do you have any questions left over from last week? When you did a read through, Jeanette.
Last week it was mentioned that James was influenced.
Okay, hold on, Jeanette. I think one of the things might be when you face the microphone and the camera, you pick up better, and when you look down, we can't hear you.
Okay. So you can hear me as I
A little bit better.
A little bit better. Okay.
Oh, that's better.
That James was influenced by Greek philosophy and as well as others. And I think in that early Christian period, Christians were influenced by Greek philosophy. And I was reading a little bit online about, terminology, techniques, categories. It would elaborate on that a little bit more. As techniques point to things like what? Allegories and analogies and I don't know, maybe hierarchies of categories, but could you elaborate on that a little bit more?
I heard most of what you said. And so let me repeat back what I heard and then you can fill in the blanks, okay?
Okay.
So you were reading about Greek styles of writing and thought, and you were reading about the categories and the archetypes and the allegories. And you want me to expand on that, but I'm not sure what you want me to expand on.
You said, reading online, the James were influenced by Greek philosophy. So I just wanted you to elaborate on that influence. What kind of influence did their techniques and approaches have on the Christians?
Okay. So the question is, I mentioned vaguely that Greek philosophy has influenced Christian writers from the very beginning, and James is one of them. And Jeanette wants more details about that. I'm not sure I can give you a huge amount of detail there without also giving you a complete overview of ancient Greek philosophy. let me throw some interesting thoughts at you, or at least I find them interesting. I don't know. Maybe you guys won't. So the Greeks were the first people in the historical record. And I want to be clear about that, because civilizations all across the globe have risen and fallen and have created amazing feats of architecture and math and undoubtedly philosophy, but they haven't always been preserved. And when I talk about the Greeks, I'm actually talking about looking at the Western world. And this is not including like China, which as a civilization vastly predates, the Greek Empire and the Hellenistic period, which is the period after the Greek Empire, when Greek thought was disseminated through the Western world and accepted as, oh my gosh, these people think really well. And so like in China, they are thinking deep philosophical thoughts that are amazing if you go and look at them, but they didn't proliferate beyond China, or at least not far beyond China. So I really am looking at kind of what we consider the Western world, fully acknowledging that amazing things were going on in China and have been recorded, and that amazing things were very likely going on in the Americas and in Africa and in other places, but there's no historical record of it. Right. And so this is the historical record. So one of the things that the Greeks give us that we might not even realize is this systematic way of looking and examining our world. Now, it's not exactly the scientific method, but it led to the scientific method. And Greek philosophy could be argued to be one of the absolute most important pillars or foundation stones of Western civilization. Now, having said that, it was the Roman Empire and its expansion that brought Greek thought and Greek philosophy into areas in the rest of the Western world initially. And so what perhaps the best thing that the Roman Empire gave the area of Palestine that we now think of as Israel-Palestine, and thus the nascent Christian church, was a regularized, logical, rational mindset to begin to consider the world, so that it wasn't just about arguing religious law on religious grounds. It started to become arguing religious law on rational grounds. And that is different. That is something that does not come from our Hebrew spiritual mothers and fathers. That is something that comes from our Greek and Roman forebearers. That is a huge part of the influence. Now, Roman Empire collapses. Well, at least the Western portion does, mid-300s. And all of this is lost in the Western world. And by all of this, I mean the Greek philosophy is lost. And it's only rediscovered in late 1100s, early 1200s, which is what the Christian church labels the Scholastic period. And they call it the Scholastic period because scholars in the Christian world, in the Jewish world, and the Islamic world rediscovered Greek philosophy. Literally, copies of Plato and Aristotle and Epictetus and Seneca and Marcus Aurelius were discovered, translated into Latin and Hebrew and Arabic. And copies started to go out to the greatest thinkers of the Western world, Christian thinkers, Jewish thinkers, Islamic thinkers.
What period was this?
This the Christians call it the Scholastic period. It late 1100s, maybe mid or mid 1100s, and 1200s, big in the 1200s. And where you see this happening, all of a sudden, you see the rise of the first universities. The first one was Islamic. And then you see the rise of Oxford and Cambridge and the first university in France, which I can't remember the name of. And, you know, the very oldest universities in the Western world are all from, like, the Islamic one was first, and it was a little bit earlier, but like the very last year of 11th century, and then the 1100s and the 1200s. And it's this rise of people beginning to look at the world in a rational and logical way, and not just, you know, in the Christian church, not just making arguments about theology based in the Bible alone. And this is important for us to consider as Episcopalians, because we have long established in the Anglican church and the Episcopal church that our faith rests on a three-legged stool. That is the stool of faith that we sit on. And the three legs are the Bible, reason, and tradition. And that those three legs, boop, are equally long, equally important, and they give us a balanced place to sit and reflect on the world. Sue.
Bible, reason, and what?
Tradition.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, and by tradition, I mean the worship that we do, the prayers that we have, and the things that we have always believed. And so the things we have always believed are important, but they're not more important than reason. The Bible is important, but it's not more important than reason, than our ability to logically think through these things and think, it doesn't make sense to me. And it is valid that it doesn't make sense to me. And until it makes sense to me, I don't have to buy it. I don't have to pick that up and put it in my bag and carry it along with me on my way. So going back to James, it's to be able to pick out strand by strand. Okay, this part is definitely Hebrew. He's thinking with a Hebrew mindset here. This part is definitely Greek. He's thinking with a Greek mindset here. You know, I could probably do that as we walk through it, and as you have questions on this passage, that passage, I might be able to name it for you. But I'll be honest, I have not studied Greek philosophy as much as I want to, and I'm working on that right now. That's my continuing ed this year, Greek philosophy. But it's the more I read and the more I am personally exposed to these philosophers and to modern and ancient interpretations and explanations of, you know, what this means, the clearer I see, oh, that was the original influence. This kind of thinking, that's where it comes from. And it's like walking through my day, or, you know, any of us walking through our days and hearing people speak and thinking, I know where those influences come from. And whether they say things that are inspiring to us, or they give you a direct quote that they don't realize they're quoting, because it's fun to hear people talk and hear them quote Shakespeare without knowing they're quoting Shakespeare. Things like that. Or if what they're saying is really offensive to you, but maybe you can have a little compassion and think, you know, that comment is racist, or that comment is, you know, fairly tinged with misogyny, but I get it. I get where they're coming from. I know why they're saying it. And the best I can do right now is have compassion for them. Mm-hmm. So it's complicated. It's as complicated as doing a 10-year deep dive into the cultural situation of the time of Jesus. And I'm much more familiar with cultural issues in the time of Jesus from the Hebrew perspective and from the Palestinian perspective, not that I'm an expert, but you know, it's something I've been studying, than I am the Greek philosophical angle. But a deep dive there is well worth it and totally fascinating. Are there any further questions left over from last week before we begin again? Sue?
I was wondering if the email group setup had gone out with the translation of the prayer, the Maori prayer from New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Did it? Because I did not get it.
I didn't get it either.
Pardon me?
Okay. Jeanette, will you make sure that you have Sue and Grace's email addresses?
Yeah, I'll resend it, right? Because I know that Donna got it. I mean, at first she didn't, because it bounced. You know, it was obvious she didn't get it. And I sent it to her and she has it. She showed me. Okay. I didn't know that other people
could
receive it.
Okay, Marilyn got it as well. So Sue and Grace, why don't you also check your spam folder? Just to make sure, because you didn't know about these things.
Yeah,
no big deal. I can easily send it. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Will do.
Any other follow up from last week? Okay, let's dig in. We are in chapter 3 of James. And again, we're going to read chapter 3 and chapter 4. Well, hold on. I'm thinking. Okay. For some reason, I thought there were 6 chapters in James. I don't know what I was thinking. There are 5 chapters in James.
Right.
So, I'm sorry?
I didn't think we did chapter 2 yet.
I didn't think we did either.
No, I don't have any underline.
We only did chapter 1 last week.
My bad. Let's
You're
do
ahead of us.
Okay. Clearly, I'm not thinking. Do we have a volunteer to read chapter 2, which we have not yet done?
I can do.
All right, Sue, read us chapter 2.
My brothers and sisters, do you, with your acts of favoritism, really believe in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ? For if a person with gold rings and in fine clothes comes into your assembly, and if a poor person in dirty clothes also comes in, and if you take notice of the one wearing the fine clothes and say, "Have a seat here, please," while to the one who is poor, you say, "Stand there or sit at my feet," have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? Listen to my beloved brother. Listen, my beloved brothers and sisters. Has not God chosen the poor in the world to be rich in faith and to be heirs of the kingdom that he has promised to those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor. Is it not the rich who oppress you? Is it not they who drag you into court? Is it not they who blaspheme the excellent name that was invoked over you? You do well if you really fulfill the royal law according to the scripture. You shall love your neighbor as yourself, but if you show partiality, you commit sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors. For whoever keeps the whole law but fails in one point has become accountable for all of it. For the one who said, "You shall not commit adultery," also said, "You shall not murder." Now, if you do not commit adultery, but if you murder, you have become a transgressor of the law. So speak and so act as those who are to be judged by the law of liberty. For judgment will be without mercy to anyone who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but do not have works. Can faith save you? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm, eat your fill, and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what good is that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I, by my works, will show you my faith. You believe that God is one, you do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. Do you want to be shown, you senseless person, that faith apart from works is barren? Was not our ancestor Abraham justified by works when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that faith was active along with his work. Faith was, Faith was brought to completion by the works. Thus the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. You see that a person is justified by works, not by faith alone. Likewise, was not Rahab, the prostitute, also justified by works when she welcomed the messengers and sent them out by another road? For just as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is also dead.
Thank you, Sue. Let's let that sink in for a moment or two for the introverts in a moment of quiet. What do you notice in this reading of chapter 2? Jeanette?
In verse 12, it says, so speak and so act as those who are judged by the law of liberty. What is he referring to when he says the law of liberty?
Give me the line number.
Verse 12.
Let's look at verse 12. So verse 12 says, so speak and so act as those who are to be judged by the law of liberty. For judgment will be without mercy to anyone who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Yep. What do you guys make of that? What do you think?
The law of liberty.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of this? Any takers?
Well, I think it's like practice what you preach.
I like it. Don't be a hypocrite. Always good advice. What are you thinking, Sue? You got a thoughtful look on your face.
It's the puzzle of semantics.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran across the thoughts that seem to come out of this reading in my prayers earlier this morning from two sources. In the foreword, day by day, or whatever the title of that is, the basic reading had to do with judging others. And so that kind of sounded very much like the first part of this. And so there's the little meditation on judging others, and it just sort of slid right into this. And in a different section of other prayers, the verse was from a psalm, I think. I was going to go back and get it, but I didn't want to leave. Something to the effect that love, that the unforgiven are slow to love, or the unforgiven have difficult. I would need to go back and get the exact quote. So that to me sounds like the liberty aspect of it, is that when we forgive others, we open them. And when we don't forgive, whether it's just in our hearts or our heads, but we carry that with us. And when we don't forgive, we make it more difficult for them to love. And that makes liberty impossible.
Sounds great. I like it. Marilyn, what are you thinking about over there?
I'm not sure exactly what it is that I want to say, but I kept going back to this time when I was a teenager and thinking, I remember the point where I realized that my father was a very reasonable man. And by, I don't mean reasonable like easy to deal with, but I mean, he reason and logic were his thing. And I felt that if I presented him with something that I felt strongly about and used reason and logic, I would reach him. And his answer was, because I'm your father. So I realized that I wasn't going to get anywhere with my reason and logic too. But it makes me think that whatever we do and whoever we are and what we do as a result of everything, it really is our own decision. And laws are there for good reason and all of that stuff. But when it comes right down to it, what we do is what we have weighed and found important and quote, right. And not, somebody else. And so I guess that's my point, is that whatever we do and whatever we choose to make valuable in our lives, or whatever points or law or whatever, it still boils down to what we decide for ourselves is quote, right.
I like it.
Where I'm going with that, I don't know, but
it's a good place to be.
My point is that it doesn't really ever depend on somebody else. The bottom line is it depends upon us and what we want and why we want it. And
so forth. And I, you know, that is a philosophy that I think would jive very well with Jesus's deeper teachings on why the law is important. Because it's not just about, you know, Moses told you, you shall not murder. But I tell you, if you look at someone with hate in your heart and call them a fool in your head, you've murdered them. And so it's really, as Marilyn just said, it's really about our own internal disposition and the choices we are making inside of us that really affect the rest of the world. And, you know, to my answer for Jeanette's question, which I'd like to point out is no more valid or no less valid than Grace's answer and Sue's answer and Marilyn's answer, is it strikes me that the law of liberty is meant to look at the Jewish law, which, you know, Jews were, they were taught and they were inclined to think that their religious law was perfection, that it didn't get any better than their religious law because it was handed down by God. And if you could manage to keep it all, you could truly be a perfect and holy person. Hands down, absolutely. Just keep the law. And, you know, and Jesus didn't always agree with the law. Jesus didn't always agree with the application of the law, is a better way to put it, maybe. And so, you know, you have all of these teachers that come after Jesus who are wrestling and struggling with, okay, we've got the law, but then Jesus upturns the law sometimes. And so how do we lead communities of people who are a lot more clueless than Jesus and a lot less able to successfully interpret for themselves the way Jesus did? How do we lead them? How do we teach them? What do we say about the law? And so with that kind of framework, I see James as, you know, whoever was writing under the pseudonym of James, I see them as really trying to address this issue of people, like it says in the, you know, in the verses 10 and 11 before 12, trying to address the issue of people strutting around and saying, oh, I'm great. I mean, you know, I steal all the time, but I don't break any of the other laws. And him saying, okay, so these laws, they're not just laws, and they're not just Hebrew laws. They are the path that gives us freedom. They are the laws of liberty. And so if we walk down them, you know, it's not just about being a good Jew. It's about changing who we are inside of us to have a greater freedom in this world. And that to me is a very Greek philosophical thought. Because for the Greeks, the highest, or you know, in Greek philosophy, all of Greek philosophy wrestles with the question, and this is a bad translation, but how does a person live the happy life? And happy is the bad translation here, because it's the fulfilled life. It's the enriched life. It is, if you like, the enlightened life. Like, how does a person actually live the fulfilled, contented life? How do you do it? And so all Greek philosophy tries to answer those questions and dive deep into our emotions and our motivations and the way we address obstacles that we face and encounter. And then different schools rise up. You know, there's this way of thinking about it, and then there's this way of thinking about it, but they're all discussing, and in a good-naturedly way most of the time, arguing this, the answer to this question. How does a person, or because they were ancient Greeks, how does a man live the happy, fulfilled, contented, enlightened life? And so there is an aspect in Greek philosophy that could translate that into the understanding of freedom. How does a man live a life unfettered, free? And so then when we see James talking about the law of liberty, he's taking these Greek philosophical questions at the core of all Greek philosophy and saying, the Hebrew law, that's how you do it. You follow the Hebrew law with Jesus's interpretations, and that's how you live. The way of internal freedom. Yes, Sue.
Is that what Jesus then summed up in his two laws? Love God, love your neighbor as yourself. Not just love your neighbor, but love your neighbor as yourself.
Which also implies you're loving yourself in a good and proper way.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Jesus also was clearly influenced. Well, either. Jesus was clearly influenced by Greek philosophy along with everybody else in the region. Or Greek philosophy was really on to something. And they really did start to plumb some of the truths of reality. Maybe they did it better, maybe they did it worse. And so when Jesus comes along, Jesus, who is the Son of God and who has plumbed the depth of reality, thank you very much, and who does understand the way the world really works, he sounds a lot like Greek philosophy, not because he was raised with it, because Greek philosophy was pretty close to the truth.
Oh, and he put it in the layman's terms.
Yes, he did. And really, of all the Greek philosophers, the only ones who are, shall we say, easy to read, even now, are the Stoics. And it's not, like, if you read Stoic philosophy, like ancient Stoic philosophy, like Marcus Aurelius, it's not that he sounds like a Christian. But if you have a more liberal theology of, say, Jesus' teachings, Stoic philosophy will feel strangely familiar and comfortable. Strangely familiar and comfortable. Be like, oh, yeah, that does kind of sound like something maybe Jesus would mention in passing. As just, yeah, it's a way of the world. Marilyn, what's up?
It just, not just now occurred to me, but actually what Jesus was saying, though, is he was putting others first, others as God, others as other people. And those were the two things that were the most important in life. In order to live the correct life, it's to put others, God and other people, first.
Well,
not to eliminate self, but...
Right, I'm gonna push back a little bit. I'm gonna push back a little bit because we are all women in this group. And women in the Western world have a shocking and toxic tendency to put others first and to forget to take care of themselves. And I'm not saying that any of you fine ladies do that, but I am saying that it is a cultural expectation that we will all do that. And that was not the cultural expectation for Jesus or for the men that he was speaking to. And it was predominantly men, though not exclusively men. And so I would preach this differently if this were a group full of men. But since it's a group full of women, I really want to emphasize that loving God with your whole being and loving your neighbor as yourself, the as yourself is an important clause. Because you cannot actually put other people first. You will die faster that way. Your soul will drain of all of its energy that way. It's like the flight attendants have been telling us for years, put your mask on first and then attend to the person next to you.
Yeah.
You have to put your mask on first. And so it's about this balance, I think, that Jesus was trying to tell us, that you are just as important, but no more important than your neighbor, who is just as important, but no more important than God. And what you could look into that and see into that is a sense of non-duality, a sense that I am not actually apart from my neighbor. I don't actually exist apart from you. And so when I fully and completely love myself, by definition, I also fully and completely love you, because there's no actual real difference between us. Now, we could argue with that. Oh, we could argue with that for years and years and years and years and years by saying, well, we're in a Zoom call and I'm over here and you're over there. That's difference number one. True. But we're also talking about a deep spiritual truth and not just about life on the physical plane. So in this deep spiritual way, what if there's no meaningful difference between me and Jeanette? What if there's no meaningful difference between Grace and Sue? And so that has implications, because if there's no meaningful difference between all of God's created creatures, then there's no meaningful difference between God and creation. And we're all actually one. And so then we live inside of the love of God. And this is just a terrible nightmare we're having about what would it be like to not live inside the love of God? Ooh, badness. Let's wake up. your deep dive into non-duality. Any other questions?
If you're not confused now, you could be later.
There are books on that too.
Yeah, when you think about being part of being the human body of Christ, that part that we're part of each other, you can't take your hand and your foot and see them as two separate entities, even though you can hurt a finger or a toe and it hurts that part of the body, but it's all part of your body. So if we are the body of Christ on earth, each of us are part of the other person.
Jeanette, what do you think?
Good question. Verse 19 says, you believe that God is one, you do well. What does that mean? You believe that God is one.
Well, that could mean a bunch of different things. What is your impression? Grace, Sue, Marilyn, where are you on this question?
The false God, the lowercase G or L in God and Lord.
No, so, it's an uppercase.
Yes, so you believe that there is one God and that is the only God. And all these lesser things that could be gods are not really.
Grace, Marilyn, you want to weigh in on this one?
Not yet.
Okay. Grace, you got any thoughts over there in Florida? I didn't realize you were in Florida. I'm so jealous now. Go on.
Come on down. Snowbird.
Okay. So one of the things, just it's a Hebrew reference as well, very likely. So the main Jewish prayer is short, and it's something that Jews were supposed to say just all the time, because it was something that they were supposed to, you know, write on their foreheads and on their doorposts and on their hands so that they could always remember, pardon me, and it would be passed down generation to generation, no matter what happened, no matter how close they were to the temple, no matter if they were in exile, whether they were coming or going or whatever happened, this was the prayer they were supposed to remember. They called it the Shema, because that's the first Hebrew word in the prayer. And the prayer is real simple. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. It goes on a little bit further, but that's the first line. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. And Shema is the Hebrew word for hear. So it starts, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Elohim, something, something, something. I don't remember the rest of the prayer in Hebrew. So, James is in the middle of a diatribe portion. And that would be the Greek philosophical, rhetorical way of arguing, where you argue against an unseen opponent. So when he says, but someone will say, blah, 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 blah. That's a diatribe style of rhetoric. So he says, someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works and I will show you my works apart from my faith. And then he says, you believe God is one? You do well. Even the demons believe that. So James is not actually mentioning the Shema in favorable light. So he's saying, okay, you're a good Jew and you've written the prayer on your forehead and on your hand and on the lintels of your house. And you say it coming home and coming back and going out and going in. And when the sun rises and when the sun sets, and I'm not impressed. Because the Shema is about belief, or if you like faith. And James is not impressed with people who have a very strong faith and do nothing in the world. And this is a direct commentary on some of the other very popular Christian philosophies of how to be in the world, including Paul's philosophy of how to be in the world. And Paul says, you do all the beautiful things in the world, all the works in the world that are good and holy and praised and lovely. You do them internally, you do them externally, you do them in the sight of others, you do them in no one's sight at all, you do them in private. But if you don't have love in your heart, that's what it counts for. So that's Paul's theology, which we just recently heard in church if you've been attending church regularly. And James has a different philosophy. James has almost an opposite philosophy.
I think it's the same philosophy. I think it's the same philosophy. They're both saying the same thing, that you must really believe in love. God is love. And James is simply saying that if you're going to talk the talk, you've got to walk the walk, you know, that you would naturally do things out of love for people. You know, I think they're saying the same thing. I don't see any difference between James and Paul.
Okay. That's a valid translation, interpretation. What do you guys think? Grace, Sue, Marilyn, where are you on this question?
Well, St. Francis said, preach, and if you need to, use words.
What do you take away from that?
The actions to people, to the people around you, the actions will speak louder than the words.
Absolutely, right. And it'll demonstrate what you believe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a demonstration of it.
I've been dealing with that question for a long time, though. If God is love, is the showing of love, is that God? And if it's not God, where is it coming from? And I personally want to believe that acts of love are showing God, whether or not we acknowledge that that's where it's coming from or not. Mm-hmm. God is love, and love is God.
I think that when people legitimately are caring and loving other people, even if they maybe don't know it, God's working with them. You know, God is part of that. They may not acknowledge it, sometimes because they're stubborn, and sometimes because they don't get it, and sometimes because they never learned that aspect. For whatever reason, they may not purposely go out one day to do something kind for the neighbor across the street, thinking, God wants me to do this. But they go and do it, and God works through them.
Yeah.
So I think you can't do generous, kind, caring things for yourself or for anybody else if God's not in the picture, even though we don't see him. Mm-hmm. We don't even feel him.
Grace, where are you on this question?
Well, being down here in Florida, there's a very diversified population down here. We have Haitians, we have all Cubans, we have all sorts of people from all over the world, but yet we all live together. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, there are problems, but in my little community, we have lots of different nationalities living right here where I'm living. Mm-hmm. But yet we're one happy little family here. So it's like respecting each other's, wherever you come from, whatever language you speak, it's learning to respect people for who they are, not where they come from.
I was just
very good lesson.
In general, if you who love people, you know, like a relative, your husband, your child, whatever, you would do anything for them, you know, and your actions demonstrate. It's like what Marilyn was saying. What you do demonstrates your beliefs and what you value in what you think, you know, about people and your beliefs motivate your actions. They dictate your actions.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love it. Does anyone have a last observation or question for the road?
Well, when you live that way, that's liberty.
Nice. It is. Mm-hmm. It's what the Greek philosophers were looking at.
Oh, you were talking about Stoics.
Yes, ma'am.
So if we wanted to read something that is an example, what would you recommend an author? The obstacle is the way. Who's the author? Lift it up a little bit. Ryan Holiday. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is the first of three books in a series. You can tell it's not that big. And if you want to read original source material, which I do recommend to, I would recommend Marcus Aurelius. It's spelled just like you'd think it'd be spelled. And he only has one book. And yes, it is the Roman emperor, Marcus Aurelius, who was an incredibly deep Stoic philosopher, as well as being actually one of the good Roman emperors. And his book, Meditations, is brief and phenomenal. And I would say it's the easiest of the ancient writings to get behind. And it's a whole lot easier, pardon me as I fix my hair, to read and understand at face value than the Bible.
You know, well, there's a song that we sing in church, and I think little children sing it as well, but it just sums it all up. It says, God is love. And where true love is, God is everywhere. And that's it.
God is also there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And as St. Augustine says, when you sing, you pray twice.
Oh, I like it.
It's really the only thing St. Augustine says that I approve of. Okay. Thank you for joining me today. This has been James Chapter 2. I'm going to remember this. It's going to be awesome. And next week, we will dig into James Chapter 3.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you too. Very much.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye-bye.